This is Melissa, and it is the 12th of April, 2026. I hope that you're all doing well. And I want to let you know the first big news, and something that I'm really excited about, is that the cutting through volumes are at the printer for the official run. So this is great. I got the second and final proof yesterday, and I have signed off on that. And so they will go into production tomorrow. The artist, Ula, who came up with this wonderful idea, and her husband, Derek, I will do a real history with them that will go up on the 23rd of this month. And we will show you the book and we'll talk about it. And Ula can, you know, tell you how she came up with the idea. And we can give you some of the high points of the saga of getting this done. So I'm really excited about that. And I also want to remind you of the ways in which you can support what I'm doing and Cutting Through the Matrix. There are, you know, websites to renew and domain names to renew and bills to pay, et cetera, et cetera. So you can visit cuttingthroughthematrix.com and you'll see all of the official sites, those websites that we started many, many years ago that, you know, are all on the go. And you will also see the new video channels that I have started and Substack, which I'm coming up on. I can't believe it, but I think it's about 11 months since I started that. So I appreciate all of your support, and you will see ways to do that when you visit the website. You'll see the Stripe link that you can use to order and donate, and you'll be able to see the books that are available to purchase. Alan's Cutting Through Books knows. I know that some of you are going to want that first edition, the gorilla, that dangerous edition that he made on the kitchen floor. And you will see Waiting for the Miracle, which is translated into four languages. Besides English, it's German and Portuguese and Spanish. And there are the flash drives, those beautiful flash drives, which I would encourage you to have in your collection if you can afford them. They are, it's about to have those seven flash drives with all of Alan's talks and videos on there is about a quarter of what it would cost you to have each and every one of his CDs and DVDs. So I have gone out of my way for many years now to bring you the very best of Alan and all of Alan's talks, and organized in as beautiful a way as I can do for you. So thank you for your support. I appreciate it. And one other way to get in touch with me is to write me at CTTM, Post Office Box 815 Keene, K-E-E-N-E, Texas 76059. And I just want to mention, I met a lovely couple last week who emailed, and they said they had been listening to Alan for a long time. And I just enjoyed meeting them so much. So they said, hey, we noticed that you're in Keene, because I kept calling out the post office box, the address. And they were just, like about a 20-minute drive away. And I went, and they bought me some tea, and we had a lovely visit. And I think because, you know, they love Alan and they've listened to him for years and years and years, it just felt like meeting family. So it was great. I have picked a talk to go up today that I know that you will enjoy. This is an RBN talk. And I'll tell you, all of the RBN talks were numbered. And this has an auspicious number, as the Chinese say. It's 1,001. So January 16, 2012. How are the mighty conquered? Disappearing Arab countries, biometric border. Is all in the agenda, hard road to world order. Hypersexualization of children so they'll never mate in long-term relationships. We're finding out too late. Women producing testosterone, aggressive. Finding men almost sterile. Sperm count declining. Yes, scientists have been busy warring on us. Continuous, quiet. Secrecy guarantees no fuss. Alan got into psychology and psychiatry and how these have been promoted as the new gods, psychiatrists, psychologists. They're the new gods. And it's definitely true. When we let somebody in our head, well, we best be careful and know or have a good idea what their agenda might be. Because chances are somehow your mind is being made more accommodating to the agenda. Sometimes we call that propaganda. And Alan talked about propaganda in this discussion that he, in this conversation that he had with you. And he mentioned a couple of documents, studies, articles, and I will link to the main, the original talk on the website, and you can see all of the original articles that went with it. But I want to point out a couple in particular, or at least one in particular, and that is from the Council on Foreign Relations publication, and it is entitled The Hard Road to World Order. Now, I read this yesterday, and it had been a long time since I read it, and it's not the easiest, you know, reading, because there's a lot of things, you know, the author talks about GATT and the IMF and the OECD and UNCTAD and ECOSOC. So there are a lot of acronyms. He discusses the UN and the function of the UN and NATO. The title of this Alan used in his poem. It is from Foreign Affairs Magazine, and it was written by Richard N. Gardner. And it's about 22 pages long, but like I said, it's really well worth reading. He discusses he mentions in here a psychologist. Really, we might call him the father of modern psychology, or the grandfather of modern psychology. And he writes here on the very first page, he's talking about world government and what is actually keeping us from having that world government, because after all, they, the elite, have agreed that it's a good thing. And so what stands in the way? Oh, the pesky nationalism and etc. But he wrote, in short, the house of world order will have to be built from the bottom up rather than from the top down. It will look like a great, booming, buzzing confusion, to use William James' famous description of reality, but an end run around national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, will accomplish much more than the old-fashioned frontal assault. Now, longtime listeners are going to, when you heard that end run around national sovereignty, your ears perk up, because you've heard Alan mention that numerous times. So I've just noticed that a hard rain is coming down. So if you hear the pelting on the window, that's what's going on. So I'm going to post this for you to read. Like I said, this is 52 years old, this article. Older than many of you who are listening or will be reading it. But it is as relevant, I think, now as it was then. Another document that Alan mentions that I am going to link to and give you just a little bit of background on is something called the Brainwashing Manual. Now, the authorship of this is possibly in question. The validity of this is also in question. It's got an interesting background, and I'll post to a couple of things about it, at least the wiki page, so that you can do your own homework if you're interested. But so it's called the Brainwashing Manual, and we are told in the introduction that it was written by L. Ron Hubbard of Dianetics, Scientology. Now, the editor, who says his name is Charles Stickley. There was a Charles Stickley, but I'm pretty sure he was an artist or furniture maker, or, you know, maybe a contemporary of Frank Lloyd Wright. I'm not sure. This hasn't come into my head exactly who he was, but I've heard that name, but it's not that Charles Stickley. So, but this is whoever this is, if it was, it could be, because like I said, the authorship is in question. Wrote, "This book is a synthesis of information gathered through observation, discussion, investigation, and experience over the last 10 years. I cannot entirely vouch for its authenticity. Disclosure of the sources from which it is drawn would undoubtedly lead to great difficulties for them, and in matters of this kind, the Soviet is not accustomed to the issuance of validations." So he goes on to tell you that as it was assembled, he felt that there were two trustworthy people, and they were trustworthy because they were often mentioned as Soviet targets and were mentioned in the text of the book as being antipathetic to the Soviet program. And those were Christian Scientists and Dianeticists, and that's the Scientologists. So this Stickley said, "Knowing from my information sources that Dianetics and Christian Science and their people have experienced years of mauling and defamation at communist hands, I submitted to these organizations this work." Now, this is one of those documents that I felt, after looking through it again last night, that it doesn't really matter if it's a hoax. It doesn't matter if L. Ron Hubbard wrote it or he didn't write it, or if this was a piece of CIA orchestrated propaganda, because it might well have been. It's got a lot of truth about technique in it. So some of the, supposedly some of this came from a speech by Beria in the Soviet Union. So there's the address by Beria, the history and definition of psychopolitics, and Alan talks about that in this discussion, in this talk. The constitution of man as a political organism, man as an economic organism, state goals for the individual and masses, an examination of loyalties, the general subject of obedience, anatomy of stimulus response mechanisms of man, etc. Like I said, the techniques that are described in this book, and I'm going to read just a moment here from Wikipedia and what it says. This is brainwashing, a synthesis of the Russian textbook on psychopolitics. It's a Red Scare, black propaganda book, first published by the Church of Scientology in 1955. It describes in it many of the practices that Scientology claims to oppose: psychiatry teaching, brain surgery, electroshock, income tax, etc., and describes these as communist-led conspiracies. But like I say, whatever the truth of the authorship, and there is a lot of truth in here, so I will post that for you to look at. There are a couple of other things that I wanted to mention that I think will be good companions to listening to this talk from Alan, if you have time. And the first is a documentary film called In the Shadow of Hermes from 2009. Now already, 17 years later, the filmmaking, especially with AI, and everyone is kind of spoiled as to what their eyes can handle. It looks a little rough. It's, you know, grainy, and the quality is, you know, not what a lot of people demand. But it's very interesting. I watched it yesterday for the first time in years, and it's good. And it's actually based on a book by the same author or filmmaker named Juri Lina. And Alan and I read this book together, which was entitled Under the Sign of the Scorpion. So from the book Under the Sign of the Scorpion comes this documentary In the Shadow of Hermes. And this shows how Freemasons international bankers and communists joined forces and what they achieved in the Bolshevik Revolution and beyond. So, like I said, it's well worth your time, and I will link to it for you. One of the articles that I wanted to read at least part of for you is this from the Daily Mail, dated April 10, 2026. Iran's Lego Propaganda. The U.S. took out Iranian leaders and facilities with surgical precision, but the Islamic Republic is winning the propaganda war with comedy Lego videos. Long before the first blast ripped through the night, the target was mapped out. The Americans and Israelis knew that this building near the city of Isfahan was a key node of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the IRGC, Aerospace Force. Inside, men planned and coordinated Iran's ballistic missile and drone attacks. The mid-March operation was layered and surgical. First came observation. RQ-170 Sentinels, a highly classified, low-observable, stealth, unmanned aerial system, had tracked a surge in activity at the facility. Vehicles roared in and out, crews scrambled from hangars, communications spiked. An Iranian attack was imminent. Then came the invisible assault. EA-18G Growler jets choked Iranian radar with jamming, while AGM-88 HARM missiles hunted down any communication systems still emitting signals, destroying some and forcing others to go dark. With the sight effectively blinded, F-35I Adir stealth fighters slipped into position, backed by heavier firepower. B-2 Spirit bombers carrying the massive GBU-57 massive ordnance penetrator. When the kinetic strike came, it was swift, decisive, and awesome. The GBU-57 does not explode on impact. Instead, it punches deep into its target before detonating. That night, buildings pancaked inward, their roofs buckling as reinforced steel layers imploded, crushing underground command centers. By dawn, all that remained was a charred ruin, its most senior personnel little more than a smear of blood amid shattered concrete. In the days that followed, Iran's missile activity in the region slowed. Follow-up surveillance confirmed a functional kill, a critical gap in Iran's ability to plan and execute missile operations. In so many ways, the Iran war is 21st century conflict epitomized. Never has warfare been so forensically and professionally conducted, never so surgical. Swaths of the enemy leadership taken out in minutes, cyber war neutering Iranian facilities in seconds. Never has a regime of terror been so utterly and precisely shattered from the air. On the ground, Israel's infiltration of Iran's security forces is equally extraordinary. I am told by sources, it is so pervasive that when confusing or seemingly counterproductive orders are issued, the default assumption is that they've come from commanders who are Mossad agents. The systematic degradation of Iran's security apparatus is unprecedented. And yet, the Iranian regime believe they have won. The Supreme National Security Council of Iran called the war an undeniable, historic, and crushing defeat for the enemy. It's what you'd expect them to say, but many in the West are taking them at their word. We must ask why. Well, first, the Americans and Israelis have not helped themselves. Tactical success has been paired with volatile messaging, strategic confusion, and a lack of wider planning. Worse, President Donald Trump declared from the outset that the goal was regime change. In doing so, he handed Iranians a gift. Every day they survived, they could claim they were winning, and the narrative shifted in their favor. Wars are not judged by how much damage you inflict on your enemy, but by whether you achieve your aims. By that measure, this war is, for now, a strategic failure for the United States and Israel. But there is a broader, less understood reason. Iran is now a global master of propaganda. fully aware it can't compete with Israel and the U.S. militarily, it is doing what it always does, fighting asymmetrically, this time informationally, to influence global perceptions and exploit divisions in the populations of its enemies. Now, it goes on to tell you about humorous things, ads they're running, claymation animation using Legos. And it's a lengthy article, and I don't want to take the time to read it all. But if you're interested, because again, it is propaganda, so, but at least if we know for sure that we are reading about propaganda, then it might be worth, you know, educationally, it might be worth the foray into the article. Up to you, but I will post it. I also wanted to share with you an email that I received from a long time listener. And I just want to say, by way, I had sent him a card. I was thinking of him the other day, and I wrote him a card because I was thinking of how much support he had given to Alan and to myself over the years. You know, I told him a few years ago that, I don't know, somebody had said something, it hurt my feelings. I know, but I do have feelings. And he said, "Oh, Melissa, just say thanks for sharing and move on." And I never forgot that, you know, I just that image, that just casual, "Oh, thank you for sharing." But he told me by email that he had received the card I sent him. And he said, "Alan's work filled in what I looked around and saw in real time, but I had no why to make me stop scratching my head. The website, that's the Cutting Through the Matrix website homepage at the bottom says, this is not the end. Rather, it is the end of the beginning. Ordo equals door. I know the way through. Who dares follow?" So that's what Alan put at the very bottom of the website. And this writer said, "How true. So many are preaching the end, religion especially, which makes people just assume and act as if there is no tomorrow. No one thinks to ask, is this all programmed in by a human-created algorithm, processed by the machine or newspaper they sell you? I have seen this played out since 1972, starting with the climate ruse. Today, millions spend their days on the trendy Epstein hobby, but make no effort to look at the 100 or more teen and preteens sold nightly on Figueroa Street in Los Angeles and every other major city by pimps and gangs. It is not armchair entertaining, and they are not told to do it. Alan poured the foundation and erected the frame of think for yourself. Add to that knowledge daily and act for yourself in the best way you can. Ordo is for the few who want to." He wrote, "This is what one of my trusted advisors said the other day," and he shared an article from Martin Armstrong, and I will share that article with you as well. "No one wants war, but no one wants to think either," is the headline of Martin Armstrong's article. Here's a few sentences from that. "The economic confidence model has always shown that political polarization rises sharply during periods of declining confidence in government. As trust erodes, people do not become more rational. They become more emotional and more extreme. They seek certainty in group identity rather than truth. That is what we are witnessing right now. When people stop questioning their own side and begin to justify anything simply because it aligns with their political identity, that is when a society becomes vulnerable to its own collapse. It no longer requires an external enemy. It begins to destroy itself from within. This is why independent thinking is now more important than ever. Blind loyalty to any party is a detriment to society. It prevents accountability and reason. No one wants war. The data proves that. The real question is whether people are willing to think for themselves or continue to follow respective tribes wherever they are led." I thought that that was good, the whole email and the article as well by Martin Armstrong. Now, I just mentioned a couple of other of the talks that I was listening to and things of Alan's that I read, as it, I think, is food for thought. So last week, I put up a talk, and I put it up because of the Carl Jung connection, and that we are covering that in book club. And it was entitled Mass Movements Versus the Residual Individual, Accepting the Uniqueness of Self. And Alan read from Jung, and he read a little bit about what Jung had to say about God and religion and the individual versus the mass. And so Alan was, you know, he read a little bit, and then he said, "See, this is a truth. A society itself is composed of de-individualized persons. It is completely at the mercy of the ruthless individualists." So he said, here's your dialectic, you see. Let it band together, that is, these de-individualized persons. Let it band together into groups and organizations as much as it likes. It is just this banding together and the resultant extinction of the individual personality that makes it succumb so readily to a dictator. So that again, that's what Martin Armstrong was just saying there. People don't want to think, therefore, you know, they'll do whatever their dictator or their leader says, so this is what you do. And they go, yeah, they're savages, they're animals, let's, you know, bomb them into the Stone Age, they deserve it. And Alan said, therefore, when you think you're fighting something and you're fighting for individual rights and you join all these groups, you quickly find the group mind takes over. The group mentality takes over because it forms dogmas and rules right away, and you lose your individual ability to reason and think. And I think this is one of the social media problems. The group mind takes over. In that talk from last week, Alan closed it with a song entitled You'll Never Walk Alone. And he gave you the Jerry Marsden version. And I think this is a kind of a footballer, sorry if it's supposed to be soccer, but it's I'm not very good with the UK sports there, but I do know that it's one that's popular at sporting events in the UK, and I just thought it was funny. As a totally useless aside here, I said to Alan, well, yeah, you know that's from a musical, don't you? And he's like, he'd never heard of that. So I like to be able to teach him something every once in a blue moon. Throughout the week, I kept thinking of something. It's something that Alan said in a talk once, and I liked it so much that I actually named a talk with this same name, with this out of the talk, and that is, there's a separation taking place. And so I went looking for that talk. You know, I just, you know, which talk was that? I couldn't remember which one is it. And so what he was saying is, you know, the mentality of the people who wage war on us and wage war on other people. And he was giving you some personal stories that had happened where he met somebody, and he, you know, one of them was somebody that he met who was he was an arms dealer. And they were chatting one night, and he said, Alan said, you know, all of these things you're making, these armaments and all the bullets and so on, they're going to end up killing people. They might even be used back on Canadians one day. And the arms dealer said, I don't care. I sell to whoever needs them, whoever wants them. I just want to be rich. And Alan said, he said this not in a facetious way. He was being very honest about it. I could tell by the way he said it. Alan continued, We have these odd people who are able to profit from wars. They rationalize it quite easily to themselves, even though it sounds absurd to people like me. They have no problem. There's no stammering. There's no hesitancy in their answers. They're telling you genuinely how they feel. You find it's incomprehensible how a person can care so much about family, friends, and so on, but have that kind of attitude towards what he has chosen to do. These people really do exist. This is a telling period for humanity because there's a separation taking place. This separation has been talked about in previous ages, as it's called, where society gets to such a stage of corruption from the top to the bottom that something happens, either man-made or whatever, and most people are wiped out. Others have taken some sort of moral stance concerning the story, that there's a change in certain humans themselves. There are certain humans alive who are different from the rest, and these ones come through, whereas those who are still base do not. Now, he goes on to tell you that the elite believe they're the superior ones, even though they're the most evil creatures on the planet. And we worship. We're taught to worship their wealth. And so we don't care. We just turn a blind eye when they slaughter. A little bit later in this talk, which, by the way, I have to say, I put this up a couple of years ago. It was called Tinkering in the Matrix of the Womb. I put it up, and it was pulled down off of one of the big channels because I'll have to cut this part out, as I'll have to cut out a part there about inoculations in the current talk. Alan simply read an article called DNA Vaccine Immunizes Fetal Lambs. And it was from Science News 2000. It was a peer-reviewed paper, and it was pulled down for medical misinformation. So I will be eliminating that one for a certain channel. So he said, people worship very old noble families who got their wealth and their power by slaughtering everyone else around them, generally because they had a big family. They're going off and slaughtering other people. Isn't that what's happening right now? That's how I see it. And Alan said, we're witnessing the end of humanity as we know it. In all the old holy books and other countries have this fable story in it, whatever it is, even Judaism has in it, that we go through these cycles and reach a point of total debasement, and then catastrophe comes and people are wiped away. And Alan said, I have to admit it, I've seen the good and bad in my life in extremes. Today, we're seeing the dividing line between those who care and the majority who do not. That point is past, in fact. It's already decided, and most do not care. Now, I just want to go back to the email where he mentions the website. And this is Alan putting this at the bottom of the website. This is not the end. Rather, it is the end of the beginning. Ordo equals door. I-E-Y-E. I know the way through. Who dares follow? I've often called Alan a way-shower. I know Prince has used that term with him. Could it be, just a question, something to think about, could it be that caring for others, really deeply caring, enough so that you get up out of your chair and do something, could it be that that's the way out for some? Just something to think about. To be an individual is truly one of the hardest things. It really is. It's very difficult because what you see, you know, everything's a microcosm. Family's a microcosm. It's a little example of the tribe. Your little friendship group is a microcosm. Your tribe, you know, your social media hangout place, it's a microcosm. And you see tribe, and the tribe doesn't like it when somebody stands out and says something different, you know. It's tribal, you know. If your tribe is you know, hey, let's go bomb them into the Stone Age, and you don't feel that way, you're out. So the way of the individual is always challenging. But I really love that there. Alan says there's a separation taking place. In fact, it has already taken place. So for whatever comes next, as he said, I, EYE, know the way through. Who dares follow? This one from the past that I revisited, Tinkering in the Matrix of the Womb, I didn't listen to it again, but I just read the transcript, and I noticed with a kind of an interesting smile, as they say, I got to the bottom and saw that he ended that one too with "You'll Never Walk Alone" by Jerry Marsden. So clearly for him, that song represented something that's hopeful, I think, for the individual. We're completely separated. At the end of the day, we don't really have a tribe, because like I said, the tribe is, it's always got that, you know, the microcosm of the macrocosm, which means there's projection and competition and envy and one-upsmanship or whatever the dynamic is. You have your dark triad types or your, you know, needy types or whatever. But I've noticed this in life. I've experienced it, and it's really wonderful. There is such a thing as a meeting of the minds. It's not every day. You may not live in proximity with them, but it's a very satisfying thing. So in that way, you'll never walk alone. Have a good week. I will be speaking with you again in a variety of ways. We had a great book club on Zoom today, and you are all welcome to join us next Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we will be discussing Chapter 2, Religion as the Counterbalance to Mass-Mindedness. Very interesting discussions we're having, and you're welcome there. Take care.
There's a code of silence that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a code of silence and it can't go on.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on the 16th of January 2012. For newcomers, you should always make use of the website cuttingthroughthematrix.com. You'll find over 1,000 audios on there for free download, and hopefully you'll get answers to the big system you're born into, this confusing matrix that you're born into, that really this was one hell of a mind job, where big organizations, big private organizations, foundations, big international bankers, literally a long time ago, set up to take over the world, everything in it, and using science, they would make it into the more perfected version of how the world should really be, including the kind of folk they want to live in it too, how they'd behave, and how many they'd be too. That's a big part of it as well. They wanted to bring down the population to what they saw was a post-industrial level. So we're on our way now with the cancers skyrocketing and so on. Anyway, help yourself to the audios. Remember, all those sites listed at cuttingthroughthematrix.com have transcripts for PrintUp 2 in English. And if you want transcripts in other languages, go into alanwattsentinel.eu and help yourself to the variety offered there. Number two, you are the audience that bring me to you. I don't sell anything at all except my books and discs, and that keeps me going. I just crawl along with it, basically. And that way I've got more scope to be more honest. After all, if you're selling something from different sponsors, you're kind of obliged to them, or obliged to the kind of things that they're selling to go along with it. So I'm kind of a free agent, and all the ads you hear on this particular broadcast are by private companies right to RBN. I have nothing to do with it. That pays RBN for the airtime, and hopefully it pays for the staff too, and maybe a little left over for their bills, because these companies use a lot of cash to put out these particular shows. So you can help me by buying the books and discs at cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And from the US to Canada, remember, you can purchase using a personal check or a postal money order from the post office, an international one. You just have to international postal order. It's about the same price as a regular one. Some people send cash. And what I try to do here is to say, I basically chronicle the history as we're going through it, and how it happens and why it's happening too. Because a lot of the stuff that you're hearing today seems so zany and wacky and out of whack that you think they're just crazy at the top. That's what they want you to think, of course, too. But nothing's out of whack whatsoever. It's all going according to plan. This is the way it's supposed to be. Because, you see, all vestiges of your culture, all, right down to the most minutest detail, they must destroy everything. This is their agenda, to bring in the new type of creature for the new society, the new world order, the new century. It's a century of change. And as I say, the big boys who funded communism from the very beginning, and who planned it actually and controlled it and controlled capitalism, are out to bring in this whole new world order, regardless of what it costs and lives and everything else. And they will get their way, because most folk don't really know what's happening. It's not just a political game here. Politics is a game to keep you fooled. That's what politics has always been, because the politicians are all selected in advance and vetted by those who rule the world, like the Royal Institute of International Affairs, for instance, CFR, and then presented to you to take your pick of who you want. They're all the same, they're all members of the CFR, across the world, by the way, now. And it's like the old Politburo. Do you want Politburo number one, A, B, or C for the Russians? Now it's the same thing here. Back with more after this break. Hi, folks, I'm back, cutting through the matrix, and just talking about this, chronicling the events as we go through this big system, because you understand everything that is everything in society, everything that controls the social order, your cultural orders, all of these things have been so worked out perfectly a long, long time ago. Last week I mentioned the Soviet art of basically brainwashing, politics and whatever it was. It's really basically to do with brainwashing. And the idea, it's a very old thing, back from the 1930s, that particular one was. And many were turned out after it to do with more techniques in brainwashing whole nations, whole countries, whole continents. And they've been awfully successful. That ties in with what Brzezinski talked about. Not just Brzezinski, but Bezmenov, when he said that they had no idea that their techniques of degrading culture and society had worked so well. And you have to go through all the planks of the Communist Manifesto to find out what they were talking about, because they talked about end of family unit. They wanted to end bonding between male and female. They could have lots of sex, but no bonding. And the state would provide the abortions. This is back in the 30s and so on. And we've seen it all come true. It's all come to pass, because the communists were inside your own countries long ago at the high levels. But anyway, we're seeing the effects of it today, and they go further and further into craziness. It appears to be craziness to the general public, but it's not craziness at all, to do with transgenders and all the rest of it. There's an article out today. It says, sex swap teenager to enter Miss England contest. And it said, a teenage transsexual has become the first sex swap patient. It's not sex at all. You know, it's supposed to be gender swap. And you can't change your gender, no matter how well the surgeon applies his little skills there. But the fact is, I mean, if you don't have ovaries and so on, you're not a female. But anyway, that's prejudicial, you see. You've got to allow them. If they want to be a female, you've got to say, yeah, okay, you're a female. And is now into the Miss England beauty pageant. But it's been pushed from the top down. All culture, you see, in these changes are pushed from the top, not from the bottom level. And it's interesting they're pushing this as well. It says Jackie Green became the UK's youngest transsexual after an Auckland, Thailand, on her, it really is, 16th birthday. The 18-year-old who was born Jack, but lived as a girl since age 10. How can you live as a girl from the age, you're either a boy or a girl, you see, was asked to enter by modelling scouts who had no idea of her history. Well, that'd be nonsense too, because they would definitely know. So we're supposed to be all happy about this and celebrate it. I guess that's what they say nowadays, celebrate their change. Oh, let's all have a celebration. But this is all to do with transhumanism. And the more types that they can spin out there to the general public, the more confused you are eventually about what is real and what isn't real and what's right, what's not right, and what is and what isn't. And eventually they'll come forth with different kinds of humans, part animal, part this, and you'll accept it quite naturally. And then, of course, you get all the commies coming out and say, well, you've got to give them the same rights as humans, you know, they're part human. And all that stuff was debated in science fiction books back in the 60s. All that stuff. Because you're conditioned in advance, you see, by what you read, primarily through fiction. Or Hollywood, again, Hollywood's a great one for promoting all this stuff. And it implants ideas in your head to familiarize yourself with the idea. So when the real thing comes along, because it's familiar to you, you just go along with it. Think, well, I guess it had to come, and yada, yada, yada. So as that's going on too, with the end of the Middle East going on as well, because they're determined, going through the old plan that the New American Century drew up with all the countries they wanted to take out, they're determined to finish it off in the Middle East under Obama. And it says U.S. troops quietly surge into Middle East. Pentagon has quietly shifted combat troops and warships to the Middle East after the top American commander in the region warned that he needed additional forces to deal with Iran and other potential threats. I love how they reverse everything, eh? So Orwellian. It says Marine Corps General James Mattis, who heads U.S. Central Command, won White House approval for the deployments late last year after talks with the government in Baghdad broke down over keeping U.S. troops in Iraq. But the extent of the Pentagon moves, it's only now becoming clear. As his officials said, the deployments are not meant to suggest a build-up to war, no, but rather are intended as a quick reaction and contingency force in case a military crisis erupts in the standoff with Tehran over its suspected nuclear weapons program. So, as I say, it's just an old agenda, and any excuse will do, because the first casualty of war is truth. And, of course, they've been building up to inside Jordan on the border there to go into Syria as well. Read the Jerusalem papers. You have far more truth from what's happening there than you get in the US. Now, since ancient times, when money was invented, basically, and they could then hire armies and pay them in money and give them lots of brothels too, and which is standard even to today, but they make sure that then you can pay for the prostitutes, you see. But they always made sure that they had lots of prostitutes, brothels, wherever they had military depots. And since ancient times, have used this technique. If you're an army, you couldn't keep it together without cash. They'd go home, you see. If they're not allowed to plunder, and there's not so much plunder, you can eventually fill in sacks and carry it with you when you're on foot. So it's easier to pay them cash. But then they start to introducing money into the countries they conquered, and then the same boys that introduced the money into the countries would tax it back from them. That was the beginning of it. And it's all to do with big building projects. They love massive building projects, either huge cities and lovely buildings, all at the taxpayers' expense, or roads. Romans are famous for this long, long straight roads that they did. But they've got to keep doing it, because the guys who lend the money out love to get lots back in interest by big building projects. That's why they love nationalism, socialism, communism. And this one here is about a big building project for the whole of Europe that no one can make sense of. It seems a crazy idea, because they don't need it. The London to Birmingham high-speed rail link is part of a Europe-wide scheme dreamed up by Jack Delors back in 1993. It's a tantalising mystery at the heart of the immense row over the government's proposed new HS2 railway line. Every conceivable argument, commercial, economic and environmental, seems to be against what's been called the worst waste of public money for generations. Well, when there's nothing being produced, you see, they've got to get work in some way or another. And even if it's all public debt that they're using to finance it all, at least the money's moving around amongst the public, because there's no other work there, you see. And the bankers love it, because they lend the cash out to the governments to do it, and then they tax it all back from you. And that's why it works so well. Governments goes hand in hand with banking. It works awfully well. It's a cozy relationship. It says the scheme makes no practical sense at all, and yet our government seems determined to railroad it through regardless. The elephant in the room here is what's hinted at in a brief paragraph of last week's statement by Justin Greening, the Transport Secretary. She said that the new line would provide a direct link to the continent, forming the foundation for a potentially wider high-speed network in years to come. So it's a long-term, big-building project that they've always been at, you see. And, what can you say? The big builders, eh? And Chris Hoon, from the British government's latest report on her future energy supply, is a tissue of unproved assumptions and wishful thinking. That doesn't matter, though. If a ministry were to publish a completely dotted, misleading 220-page report on an issue of the highest national importance, one might at least raise an eyebrow. But if it appeared under the names of David Cameron and Nick Clegg, one might even be rather worried. But if one then saw that it was also signed by Chris Huhne, the Secretary of State for Energy and Climate Change, one could become seriously alarmed. I always have to laugh at that, you know, yeah, Secretary of Climate Change. Because even Socrates talked about that too. He says, not intent to have made rules upon all the basic things to do with the earth, as he thought they knew them. The scientists or priests of the day or philosophers were now making rules on heaven and how you get to heaven and the steps to get to heaven and the degrees of to get to heaven and all that stuff. And it hasn't changed. We've got a guy in charge of the climate change, like the charge of the weather. A guy in charge of the air, like powers of the air and stuff. And people think it's normal. At the beginning of last month, the Department of Energy and Climate Change published two documents purporting to solve the riddle of how Britain will meet its obligation under the Climate Change Act to cut CO2 by 80%. 80%. Before 2050. This is the UK being the only country in the world committed by law to do this, because your politicians sold you out. One document was a lengthy report entitled Carbon Plan. You understand they're going to get rid of about 80% of the public in that case. The other, this is a low carbon future. That's another part of it too. You have to look at your own country and see if they've signed that document, by the way. Our low carbon future. The other is an interactive computer model on the DECC website called 2050 Pathway Calculator, produced under the aegis of DECC's Chief Scientific Advisor, David Mackay, and with a puff from Friends of the Earth. You've got to look into Friends of the Earth and the statements they've made before about culling off the useless eaters and stuff. They really hate humanity. So they're working along with the political bunch in Parliament to bring all this in. They know they're going to kill off the public, but it's already happening, actually. When you've got fuel rations and folk dying in their homes in Britain, 25,000 to 50,000 a year, and that's okay, then they're already killing you. Plus, there's a lot of other means too. After Christmas, various newspapers showed some belated interest in these publications. It was shown from government figures that to meet the statutory target would cost every household in Britain nearly £5,000 every year until 2050. Another analyst then made rather more detailed critiques, led by the blogger Tim Wurstall, who, under the heading Lying with Numbers, pointed out what seems a fundamental flaw in the DEC's toy computer model. It says, Wurstall was startled to discover that relying on renewables to generate electric power would be significantly cheaper than relying on conventional power sources such as nuclear and fossil fuels. But I'll touch on this more, because we're all going to get the same agenda here. Back with more after this break. Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watts, and I'm talking about the nonsense about the carbon and how they're supposed to reduce it by treaties, you see, and meet these reductions come hell or high water. And it's all bogus. This can't do it. This is what emerges from reading the DECC report in full, as how heavily almost every page of it relies on wishful thinking and unproven assumptions. The report babbles on, for instance, about how we will live in zero-carbon homes and a zero-carbon waste economy, and how we will build 33 gigawatts of zero-carbon nuclear power and 45 gigawatts of wind power, without, of course, pointing out that 45 gigawatts refers to the capacity of the windmills, not the 15 gigawatts or less they may actually produce due to intermittency of the wind. And it says there, too, the report does not recognize that we would still need 28 gigawatts of the fossil fuel electricity, which currently supplies nearly 80% of our needs. You know, they understand they're going to bring on absolute hell because these guys are fixed in their brains and they won't have to suffer at all. They won't live like you or I, all these bureaucrats. They get subsidies for everything. They even get interest-free loans and stuff like that to buy new houses. But the rest of the public will be suffering like crazy trying to get any power at all. It says, but this brings us to perhaps the most glaring example of wishful thinking that runs right throughout the report. Its insistence that gas and coal-fired power plants can only be allowed if they're fitted with carbon capture and storage. The immensely costly equipment that's supposed to pipe away CO2 and bury it in the ground. It cannot be stated too forcefully that, as yet, the technology to do this has not been commercially developed, for the simple reason that as various scientific studies have shown, it cannot work. There's no way in which vast quantities of CO2 can be injected into rock at the high pressures necessary without fracturing the rock to the point where no more can be injected. Yet it's on this make-believe that the dreams of Cameron, Clegg and Hume ultimately rest. Understand, it's not these politicians at all, because they don't make the rules. They don't make the agenda. They simply follow their orders from their bosses. But they will. They'll bring this country, that country right down, and the whole world. Just like the Soviet Union. In the Soviet Union, they had all these weird ideas on evolution too, to prove that evolution worked. And one of their biggest scientists was elevated to the top because Stalin believed in him, who said that he could actually force evolve particular plants and crops to grow by freezing them in cold water and ice and stuff like that. And that would make them ready. You see, they'd just jump evolutionary-wise. And they could plant them in Siberia. Never worked for all those years, but anyone who criticized the scientists just ended up disappearing. This is a mentality you've got here, you see. And it's back again in full force. He points out the absurdity of something, and well, that's you. You're a non-person. And another article, too, that came in today was to do with the Bank of Natural Capital. I've mentioned technocracy before. And technocracy is not just appointing people into positions that politicians previously had. It's to do also with every person on the planet being basically an economic base and an energy consumer. And you would be paid for all the energy that you consume. Designed way back in the 1930s. And it says, this is about the TEEB study. It's about the Bank of Natural Capital. What's the Bank of Natural Capital? It's a website created to communicate the findings of the TEEB study into the economics of ecosystems and biodiversity. You understand, they'll never give you the same name. They'll never call it technocracy, at least not to the rest of the public. But this is the old agenda. The TEEB study assessed the global economic cost of ecosystem degradation and biodiversity loss and recommended solutions to policymakers, administrators, businesses, and individuals. It was initiated by the G8 and 5 plus 5, hosted by United Nations EP, and is supported by the European Commission, that's European Parliament, Germany, UK, Netherlands, Norway, Japan, and Sweden. Led by Pavan Sukhdev, the study has drawn together experience, knowledge and expertise of over 500 experts, that's his new priests, from science, economics, business, development and policy from around the world to identify and develop practical actions in response to the growing evidence of the impacts of the loss of biodiversity, etc., etc. So I'll put this link up tonight too for those who are interested. You can wade your way through it to see what's all going on at the same time. All these things are going on at the same time to bring in one new system where you would be billed for every darn thing that you, even a wrapper, the cost of making a wrapper for a piece of chocolate, the energy it consumed making that wrapper is going to be tacked onto the price of it for you. And Another article, too, is an insignificant change in the Antarctic snowmelt since 1979. A new study has come out by the big boys themselves, who had to admit that there's no difference at all. So it's just the way things go, isn't it? Another link to putting up, too, is Global Governance by 2025. I put it up twice already. It's amazing. I put stuff out there, and it's around a big circle that comes back to me from a whole bunch of sources. But I'll put it up again because it's quite a good article. So Global Governance by 2025 by US and EU intelligence agencies. I think I'll also put up, too, that old one to do with the hard road to world order, it was called, by the Council on Foreign Relations through their Foreign Affairs magazine. That's quite a few years old. They talked about running rings around the Constitution to get it and so on, and rather than just hit it head on. But I'll put that up tonight as well. And part of that psychopolitics and brainwashing technique that we're coming out talking about in the 1930s by Berry and others was to do with pushing psychiatry and psychology to the head until they'll be the real bosses and everything. Now they want to drug shy children. Yep, give them drugs. Back with more after this break. Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix and mentioning again to do with this article and other articles to read tonight about the Russian art of really psychopolitics, as he called it, how they would promote psychology and psychiatry, the new gods, basically, up to the top. And they would start to advise governments and even take over court systems, which is actually happening in South Africa. South Africa's a test bed right now. They're talking about doing away with court systems and appointing psychologists and psychiatrists over all criminal hearings. No kidding. This is happening right now. And it'll happen elsewhere too. And the UN is all behind it, of course, because they're the big communist organization owned by the Royal Institute of International Affairs that set them up. So here they go with the next phase of it. Children who are shy or considered moody run the risk of being diagnosed with mental illness and given powerful drugs like Prozac, psychologists have warned. Experts said mental health diagnoses are likely to increase from 2013 as new guidelines on the definition of mental illness are drawn up in America and are likely to be replicated in Britain. Now, new guidelines, they actually make new diseases all the time. You get nervous legs syndrome, for instance. You get a pill for that. Now, all children sit there sometimes with their balancing on the ball of their toes and the legs go, you're just full of energy. Well, that's an illness now. In the Soviet Union, if you had inflexibility of opinion on a particular topic, say like global warming, they locked you up as a nutcase. That was it. Psychologists in the UK fear school-aged children could be diagnosed with mental illnesses like social anxiety disorder if they're quieter amongst their peers, or depression if a child is temporarily sad or is battling bereavement. Meanwhile, youngsters who appear to lose their temper easily or answer back to adults could be classed as having oppositional defiant or disorder. Once diagnosed, psychologists say children are likely to be treated with powerful drugs like Prozac or Ritalin to curb their behavior without fully understanding the long-term impacts. Ritalin is already used to help control attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in youngsters under 6, and about 650,000 children aged between 8 and 13 have also been prescribed a drug or an equivalent. This is just in one country. And it says, social anxiety disorder is where someone is fearful or anxious about social situations where they might be exposed to scrutiny by others. They might be fearful of situations including having a conversation, being watched or performing in front of other people. You get social anxiety going through certain parts of Toronto now. So youngsters may react by clinging on to adults, crying or refusing to speak in social situations. And then it explains what oppositional defiant disorder is, well, as everything they've learned from television. We know with a dumb dad and a dominant mother and how you talk back to your dad and so on. Earlier this week, the TUC called for an investigation into the use of mental health drugs among school-aged children and voted to see more research into their long-term impacts. Kate Fallon, General Secretary of Association of Educational Psychologists, told the Daily Telegraph, "Behaviours develop over a long period of time, often with a range of complex causes. We can't cure the behaviours we don't like with a quick fix of medicine." But, of course, the big, powerful medicine and pharma bodies are are lobbying governments all the time as well. See, they all work in concert. All these organizations work in concert. You understand, the military industrial complex also includes pharma. I hope you understand that. And we read through Huxley's works and Russell's works and many other people's works. They all talked about giving us all drugs at the end. You see? And it's here. It's actually here. It's like when you're living under communism and you're redistributing your wealth across the world like we're doing now. Since the bank failure, your bosses all signed an agreement and we're taking your tax money and putting it across the world. It actually goes to international corporations, of course, not to third world countries as they say it is. But that's communism, folks. And they'll never tell you the word, so you'll link it all together. That's how they work, these things. Anyway, it says, they usually require careful management by all the adults around the child. Parents need to take time and energy to help their children deal with the problems and warned it was tempting to opt for a drug, which would be quicker to change their behavior. So get ready for more diagnosis of children. And, of course, they never mention the inoculations and vaccines that give inflammation in the brain. I'll be talking about that tonight, too. There's another study done on that, showing you that it kills off brain cells, these actual vaccines, etc., which they've known from the very beginning. Now, I've also mentioned as well people like not just the communists, but also the guys that worked in tandem with them, a lot of the scientists in Britain and elsewhere, Charles Galton Darwin, who in his book The Next Million Years just bewailed and bemoaned the fact of the inferior types breeding too much and they would overtake all the elite, better gene types like himself. And he advised and advocated tampering with the hormones in males and females. Yes, it could be done by adding something to the food. Well, we're on GM food now, and it's also been soaked in heavy estrogen, sort of pesticides, estrogen mimickers, and the vaccines he mentioned too. Putting vaccines, it would target the gonads, etc. We could also put it in the water supply as well. Even talked about spraying it at one point. Now, here's what I've been saying for years. It was noticed first in the 60s. And definitely sped up in the 70s, and it was a change in women. It became awfully noticeable. They started to lose their hips altogether, and more cesarean sections were done because they couldn't expand the hips during pregnancy, during birth. It says there's a growing number of women with soaring male hormones. Now, that should be a red light, just going up there. And the serious consequences that come with that. The disorder is more common in Australia than almost anywhere else in the world. Actually, Britain's pretty well on par with them, where the females are awfully aggressive. In fact, the cops say that themselves. They have more problems with women now than guys. Unusual fits of rage, emotional slumps, and even physical changes are all symptoms that are too often brushed over as stress or the side effects of a busy life. Well, how can you get physical changes on the effects of a busy life? In reality, though, they're the signs of something else entirely. Australian women are suffering from a condition nicknamed the beast within. Nurse and naturopath Sam Beaupatrick has seen a massive jump in women with high male hormone levels, dangerously high amounts of testosterone that are not injected like some athletes, but produced by women themselves. You understand, by the careful insertion of stuff into your food and injections, not the rest of it, they can actually make you produce far more testosterone or any other hormone for that matter. And it says here, ladies are elevating their male hormones, which is basically testosterone, Beaupatrick said. According to her, the normal testosterone level for an average woman is meant to be around 80 to 90. Just to put it into some perspective, male levels of testosterone are 200 to 400. It says, I have women regularly returning levels of 250 or even 300. Even 150 for some ladies is just too much, Beaupatrick said. One lady had 400, equivalent to a male, and it's a young male, by the way, was definitely starting to have facial hair. It was in a way that when you look at her, physically she looked like she was becoming a male. Now, that's without injections or anything else. There'll be no inquiry into this, by the way, because they know they're doing it. Just like the male sperm count has plummeted, and then the guys all decide to have sex changes, you know. There'll be no inquiry into it because it's meant to be this way at the top. It says Hollywood is often toyed with movies about attractive, high-powered women battling out with men, and choosing to be tough to match it in a man's world. So their whole spin on it here is that because women are competing with men, they're putting up their testosterone levels naturally, because they don't know. They don't know that this is the agenda. But I'll put up this link tonight for those who are interested one way or another. And global warming red-faced climatologist issues a groveling apology, it says here. It says on BBC Radio 4's More or Less, it says it was the episode announcing the Global Warming Policy Foundation scientific advisor Dr. David Whitehouse had won a £100 bet made on the programme 4 years ago with climatologist Dr. James Annan. Annan predicted temperatures would rise in that period. Whitehouse predicted they wouldn't. Annan lost. But you never guessed from his high-handed tone when he was asked why he'd lost. He says it was just bad luck. They can't admit to anything, these liars, you see. Annan explained, got on to insist, contradicting most available real-world data, it must be said, that the trend for global warming remained robustly positive. It's just amazing, eh? It's just the Soviet Union. That's how they were in the Soviet Union. With all the, you know, evolution existed. They could force evolution to happen. They could make the new Sovieticus man, they said. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they could make him into a new man for the 21st century. Well, they are. They're going to beauty pageants now with women. He then agreed to another 4-year bet. If it went against him a second time, he would change his mind. Annan was asked. At first, he appeared to agree that it would, but then he started backtracking, insisting that it wouldn't change in the slightest his views that carbon dioxide causes global warming. So there you go. And these are the guys who are going to lock you up for having inflexibility of opinion. And another article, too, is to do with Israeli intelligence agents posed as a CIA. This is how they do it. Remember that their motto in the Mossad is, by way of deception, we shall wage war. Deception. Someone else always gets the blame. So Israeli intelligence agents posed as a CIA to recruit operatives against Iran's nuclear program. This is from the Mail Online. One of the main entities in the Israeli intelligence community has been placing its agents within the CIA to recruit operatives against Iran's nuclear program, according to a new report. Mossad officers posed as the CIA agents were recruiting and were recruiting for the Pakistani militant group Jundullah, the report says. So we all blame Pakistan for this. It's one of these militant groups. The operation, often called the false flag operation, occurred during the presidency of George W. Bush. It won't stop, though. An explosive article by Foreign Policy, the magazine examines a series of CIA memos that detail operation, citing 6 U.S. intelligence officers as source of information. It details how Mossad officers were equipped with U.S. money, passports, and they were recruiting extremists under the nose of the U.S. intelligence officers. Well, that took cooperation, didn't it? The terrorist group, unlike most Iranians, follow the Sunni branch of Islam. News of the covert operation, including the Jundullah-run execution of an Iranian nuclear scientist, trickled up the hierarchy of U.S. government. When President Bush heard this was going on, he went absolutely ballistic, one agent said. After Barack Obama took office, the report claimed, he drastically scaled back joint U.S.-Israel intelligence programs targeting Iran. Absolutely, they're in bed together. Israel's frequent propositions to carry out covert assassination missions against Iran's nuclear program. And it says, Israel is supposed to be working with us, not against us. If they want to shed blood, it would help a lot if it was their blood and not ours, because everybody else gets blamed, right? The propositions were consistently rejected by U.S. officials, the report said. One intelligence official told the magazine, Israel is supposed to be working with us, not against us. And they repeat that. They should shed their own blood rather than get the Americans blamed. It's amazing what the Israelis thought they could get away with, a U.S. intelligence officer told Foreign Policy. The report says that Mossad's activities could increase an already tense relationship between the U.S. and Pakistan by way of deception. Eh? And now the children are getting, I mentioned this one before, but children are basically, their sex education, they're getting videos now, which are basically porn videos, like full-scale porn. This is always the whole agenda too. Hyper-sexualized children before puberty, get them all practicing it before puberty and playing with it, and they'll never bond with a single person in their life. They've separated love and relationship and bonding from the sexual act itself. That was the intention. Again, you know, Beria talked about that way back yonder, and other ones did too from the Soviet Union. Awfully successful, as we can see today. awfully successful. Tremendously so. And an article too with her decline, as she's strapped to the devil's chair and pepper sprayed to death. Horrific fate of a mentally ill grandfather who was tortured by police until he died. Nick Christie, 62, was detained by Florida police in March 2009. Suffering depression, he had a mental breakdown. No one has ever been charged following the incident. Never charged anymore. So anyway, it says he died after police officers strapped him naked to a chair, smothered him with a split hood, it's called, or a spit hood, and pepper sprayed him 10 times during a 43-hour ordeal, it has been claimed. The guy was getting smothered, he had a hood on, right? Nick Christie, 62, was allegedly tortured in the Devil's Chair at Lee County Jail after being detained by Florida police officers in March 2009 following his nervous breakdown. The hood designed to stop him from spitting at officers meant he could not escape the noxious fumes from the spray, and he was never allowed to clean the residue from his body while he was strapped, right? His family is now suing Lee County Sheriff's Department for wrongful death. The retired Boilermaker suffered from heart disease and emphysema. It says put down to his years as a smoker. Actually, he was a worker in an asbestos plant. The retired Boilermaker has suffered from heart disease, and says he had heart attacks and so on when he was in the chair. It's not clear exactly who took the shocking photograph, which was later handed to Fox 13's news team of him strapped in the chair with a hood over his face, and it's on the article here. The retired Boilermaker from Ohio suffered from heart disease, blah, blah, blah. It keeps repeating the same thing. I don't know why. What's wrong with people these days? These reporters now have thinking bits and bytes, and their memory is so short, they keep repeating the same things over and over. Anyway, it says he was treated for depression when he decided to take some time out to visit his brother in Fort Myers. Prior to the trip, his doctor moved away, leaving no one to manage his emotional state or possible side effects of his drugs. His wife was so worried about the trip that she contacted the Lee County Police to ask them to keep an eye out for him. Big mistake. You never contact the police because they come in and kill you. I've got articles here where that happened recently too, where cops were talking about a guy who, I can't remember if he was diabetic or what, but they actually came in, they found the guy and actually killed him. They came in and killed him. So never contact the cops if you're worried about somebody, for goodness sake, you know. So I'll put this article up tonight too. Another one too about a woman who was urinated on by the police. It's become awfully popular that with sadists now in a wonderful new society where children have been brought up with porno and deviancy of all kinds. And now you pee on your victims, just like those troops did last week, those Marines did on the guys that they killed. So I'll put that up tonight as well. It's just amazing the amount of stuff that it is there. And what can you say? We're totally degraded now. This article here says a judge refused to dismiss the lawsuit of a Western Pennsylvania woman who claimed state troopers pepper sprayed and later urinated on her while she was shackled hand and foot, saying the trooper's claim of sovereign immunity doesn't apply because the alleged misconduct is outside the scope of their official duties. Dorina Marie Madison, 40, of Smithfield, sued five troopers from the barracks near Uniontown August for conduct she claims occurred when she was riding in her car with her friend and she was stopped for drunken driving. Madison named two of the troopers and says the Attorney General's office representing the troopers asked that the lawsuit be dismissed under the doctrine of sovereign immunity. Sovereign immunity, which essentially contends that law enforcement officers are immune from being sued for actions within the scope of their employment. Well, where does it say you can pee on your victims when they're shackled? That's from porno movies, folks. If you don't know, back with more after this break. Hi, folks. I'm Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix, and I'll go to the callers. Now, there's Ed from Massachusetts on the line there. You're there, Ed. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi. Oh, where to start? Actually, they done a lot of research on steroids back in the 40s and 50s right here in Mass General, which put out the pill,
mm-hmm.
which they did a lot of to destroy the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And when they attacked marriage and UN music, so you know, like during the 70s, all the rock put out,
mm-hmm.
you know, free sex, and in the 80s, it was anal sex. Remember all those songs?
Mm-hmm.
Like Deep Purple, knocking at your back door.
Yep.
Right? In the 90s.
Now it's rap and it says, back it up here, bitch. No
uh-huh.
kidding. That's no kidding. This one out. Just back it up here, bitch. And rap. So it continues, yeah.
And then rap.
Yeah.
And then,
So it's an old agenda, but as I say, the whole idea of emasculating the males and making the females more masculine is an old idea, and they came out with all the techniques to do it. Remember, too, that Charles Galton Darwin was actually a physicist.
Well, Darwin's the biggest lie ever. I mean, evolution is ridiculous if you really search it.
What they mean, here's the key, though. Behind all the facade of Darwinism, they know they can make things change by using science, you see, and chemistry.
Yeah, but it's not real science. It's BS.
And you're talking about evolution. This is a later descendant from him. Charles Galton Darwin was in the 1950s. He worked on the Manhattan Project, an atomic bomb. So he was a relative of Charles Darwin, a descendant. But he himself was also into depopulation. That was his special field, depopulation. And also, he said to get rid of the aggressive males that might fight this new world order. And so he said, we'll feminize them, and we'll also make the females more aggressive so that they won't be unattractive to the male. Yeah,
yeah, well, that's where we are today.
Yep.
I know. Yeah. And that's why sometimes, like the Middle East, I like commend them. Because, you know, the man is still the castle of the home there, you know?
Well, they don't have any children's aid there. They don't have children's aid, yeah. Yeah, they don't need children's aid. They don't need a welfare system. They will after we bomb them, of course, but presently they don't need any of that stuff. They don't have the crime. There's no drug pushers there because they execute them, you know? So, you have a working society.
Education, it increases.
They know that, though, yeah. They know that. That's the intention of it. Yeah.
Well, and while it all started with Rockefeller, the Fleckner brothers.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. You know them.
Yep. Yeah.
They started the hospital system and mm-hmm. the educational system.
Yep. Yep. And they got John Dewey in as well, yep. But the whole thing is, I say, we're living through a long, long-term plan. And all the stuff that was planned 100 years ago, 50 years ago, is all out in the open.
I know that, Alan, but how do we get out of it?
Well, number one, it's like Besmanov said, now the contamination of the culture has been successful. It was successful back in the 70s, he said.
I know, and turn off the TV.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. Yep. And even if you try and keep your children away from everything, they're going to see this stuff at school, they're going to see stuff on friends' television, because it's psychological warfare, and of course the TV industry is all part of it too. You'd have to head for the hills and live in isolation. Yeah. But thanks for calling, you're quite right about that. From Hamish, myself, from Ontario, Canada, it's good night to me, your God, or your gods go with you.